Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is me, Jonathan Alexander, and I'm here to host our show, Life, Laughter, Happiness. Today, I have my co-host, Barb, here with me. Are you there, Barbara?
Yes, I am. Hi, Johnny. How are you doing today?
Doing good. And today, our guest is Carrie Pye Lawrence. And basically, I had her on. I decided to have her on because what she does is she's a divorced single parent, but gives advice to other divorced single parents. And it says here that your husband had an affair, and it was your mother. Your mother passed away the same week. Is that true?
That's true. I can't make that stuff up. That's true.
I mean,
it's called real life. But
wow.
Yeah.
That it was a long time affair, correct? And you found out about this long time affair the same week of your mother's untimely death, actually.
Yeah.
So you were not even expecting it. Wow.
No, I pretty much found out that he was having this long-time affair, and, you know, obviously I was devastated. I had two young kids at the time who are 1 and 4 years old, and, you know, I was in, you know, complete disarray. And, you know, I'm calling my mom and I'm telling her, you know, I really need you to come out here. And, you know, she was like, Carrie, I will be there. Just, I have this cold. I'll be there as soon as I get over it. She had been battling cancer and she was in like a maintenance phase, but she had a compromised immune system. And, 5 days later, she suddenly passed away.
Oh, I'm so sorry for your loss. And I know how it is.
I can honestly
tell you that because I lost my mom. It will be 1 year this April 13th. So I am very truly sorry. It sounds like your mom was always there for you in hard times, which that's what they usually are for us.
Yeah.
Our rock.
I think the hardest part in that moment was, you know, in the same week I lost the two people that were closest to me, you know, and I was left feeling pretty alone in that time, you know, and it was really a major breaking point for me. You know, I'm a pretty resilient woman, and I always thought that I could pretty much get through anything on my own, but this showed that I couldn't. I could not do it on my own, and I needed like the support of others to really like help me get through it. And that's exactly what I did.
So let me ask you before you go on, would you say that you said it was a breaking point? Was this a breakdown?
I mean, I think that it really depends on what your definition of breakdown is. I mean, my whole life fell apart in a short amount of time, and it had an enormous impact on me. For one, you know, my dreams of happily ever after were shattered. And for two, I realized how short life is and how suddenly things could change. And it was a breaking point for me, but it was also a major light bulb moment because I wanted a different life for myself. But I was so caught up in the, you know, day-to-day aspects of being a wife and working full-time and being a mother and just really treading water in life altogether that I never actually took a really hard look at me and my life and if I was happy, because I was so busy making everybody else around me happy or trying to, which clearly I wasn't doing a very good job. But
no,
you
can't blame yourself because of your husband's actions. Maybe you were doing a fine job of it. Just because
maybe
he went off and cheated isn't the other person's fault.
I mean, I do think that there's always, you always have some part, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think that it's entirely my fault, but I do think that you have a part in every situation. So there was definitely a part that I could have played. But in hindsight, it's been 6 years since then. And, you know, I think that I know that I've gotten to the place where, like, I can look at it as a, I mean, it's not a blessing that my mom died, but it was a blessing that that relationship ended. And it was also a blessing that I was able to really give myself the life that I wanted instead of the life that I guess I was settling for.
Oh, yes. And then you said that you called upon others because you couldn't do it by yourself, which is totally understandable. But if you didn't have your mom, then who did you lean on?
I mean, to be honest with you, I was in such a vulnerable place that I just was emotional, like, vomiting over anybody that I came in contact with, you know? And I think that I had always been pretty closed off, and I always had this idea of perfection in my head, and I wasn't really vulnerable in a lot of the relationships that I had with others, with like my girlfriends. And I always just kind of gave everybody the highlight reel of my life and didn't really talk about any of my real struggles or issues. And when I reached that point, I couldn't contain them anymore. And so I really just started, you know, opening up to everyone around me. And I just received an enormous amount of support, because obviously everybody felt sorry for me because it was like such a crappy situation, but it was something that I really needed. And the other thing that I did, which was super important, was I needed somebody to talk to that wasn't going to have an unbiased relationship and just emote and talk to, because I lost all the people that I could talk to. So I found a therapist, and I was like, I just need somebody that's going to listen to me. And that was hugely beneficial.
I'm so glad you did that, and I'm so glad that you let it out and were honest and raw with people, because we generally hold things in, and because we're embarrassed, you know, and
yeah.
You didn't do that. You didn't do that, which takes a lot of strength. And I want to ask you, though, did you draw strength from your mother's death and take on her attributes of what maybe she would do? Because that's what I did when my mom died. I took on all of her great qualities that I wasn't using in my own life, like creating boundaries and things like that. Tell us a little bit about what you drew from your mom during this, her death, her passing.
You know, that's a really great question, because there were a lot of similarities between my mother's story and my story. My mother had two young kids. I was two and my sister was 10 months old, and my father died suddenly at 29 years old. And so I really drew upon her strength in that situation, because she too had two young kids, and she too had to like pick up the pieces and start over again. And even though our trajectory was different, she gave me a lot of strength in that moment.
Oh, that's
because I knew
that
if she
are aware of
it, I could do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because if she could do it, I could do it, you know?
Right. And how old were your children at this time?
1 and 4.
Oh my gosh, like a baby. You had a baby.
Yeah.
And you found this out. And did your mom make it to you? Or did you at least tell her the whole story? Did you get any advice before her passing?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I had 5 days of, like, you know, constant phone calls before, you know, she passed. And, you know, obviously she was like being the mama bear that she is and talking an enormous amount of crap and telling me how wonderful I am and how I deserve better and all of the things that a mother should say to her daughter who's, like, heartbroken, you know? So,
yeah.
And I know she would have been there for me wholeheartedly, 100%, if she could.
How far away was she from you?
So I live in California, and I'm originally from Florida, which is where my mom lived. So we were 3,000 miles apart.
Wow. And she must have been not feeling too well if she was close to passing, but she was trying her best to get to her daughter. Wow. That's a great thing that you had her. Okay. What's so great about it is that you had a mom like that.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I mean, it's hard for me to talk about her like this, to be honest with you.
It
took
me
a long time to be able to talk about her and not cry. So I give you a lot of credit for only being a year out and being able to talk about your mom without, like, showing any emotion.
That's why people think I'm always so okay, Carrie. People always think that I'm so okay because I'm able to do that. Somehow I compartmentalize it, but they don't see that every day that you wake up in the morning and your tears are actually spurting out of your eyes every single day you wake up for months, you know? So I'm so glad that Johnny found you, and I don't know how, but you're here today to share your story. If you choke up, it's fine. You know, that's what we expect here. Extraordinary people telling extraordinary stories.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I just don't know why that I cannot let go like you in front of people. Maybe that's a hang up that I need to, you know, work on and find a counselor for myself, because Johnny knows I haven't even seen a counselor since this has happened.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe it would, I can't speak for you, but I know for me, it was hugely healing for me to just be able to talk, and the practice of, like, talking and emoting and being vulnerable in my feelings wasn't something, that was something that I'd always, and maybe you can identify with this too, but I was always kind of like raised to be a strong woman, you know, and strength doesn't, might didn't define strength in tears. And so I really had always tried to control those parts of myself. And it wasn't until, like, I was really broken that I just relinquished control. And then what happened after that was, like, as soon as I relinquished control, I started connecting with people on a whole other level, which I had been missing out on for such a long time. And it was a beautiful thing, and I continue to practice that and to be vulnerable and talk about my feelings and be, I mean, really it's a level of intense honesty, you know? And what I've seen, it's allowed people around me, it's given them permission to share parts of themselves that maybe they're hiding. And I just feel like, you know, if you can inspire somebody like that, you know, we all want in our lives to feel like we made a difference, you know? And
okay,
I think
so that's
the part that makes you feel different.
Okay, is this basically what a counselor would tell you then? Just, you need to talk it out and just have somebody who is neutral there, who really doesn't even know you or your family. Is that really what they do?
They didn't really, I think that it's your own, you create your own experience, you know. For me, I went in and I said, listen, I just lost the two people that were closest to me. I feel like my emotional cup is overflowing at all times, and I just need somebody to talk to so I can empty my cup so that I'm not continuously, you know, in overflow mode. And she was like, okay. And some days I would go in there and say, I don't have anything to talk about. And then I'd sit there for 2 minutes and then talk nonstop, you know. And
right.
Other days I would just walk in and start talking, and she wouldn't say a damn thing. So, and sometimes I would go in and I'd be like, I don't have anything to talk about. And she would start asking me questions. But I still see a therapist, even though I really don't have, like, any significant problems. And every single time I go and see her, I always think, do I really need to do this anymore? And every single time that I'm done, I always say to myself, I'm so glad I continued.
I will seek one out, because a lot of my friends, they're my best friends. They don't even want to talk about it because it's too painful. Well, Femben, so that's when you should seek out a professional. And I'm pretty sure that they will tell you, hey, you have enough knowledge now and enough strength to go on your way. Or if you're comfortable, just see me once a week or every other week just for a tune-up. And
yeah,
because do you feel that, though? Were your friends not able to even talk to you about it because it was just too painful for them to even think, oh, how to lose a parent. I can't even go there. Did you experience
I was 38 when I lost, you know, my father died when I was 2. My mom died when I was 38. I didn't have anybody who could even relate to that. Their parents hadn't passed, you know, so they couldn't relate. And as far as like the cheating was concerned, you know, I was met with a lot of bias. So when I would start talking about it, it was like, oh, well, F him. And, you know, you deserve better and you're amazing. But and it's great to hear those things. It's not I'm not saying that those things aren't wonderful and great, but it wasn't allowing me to heal myself. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't allowing me to work through my emotions, to really talk about, you know, all of the parts of the relationship that, you know, I should have seen coming, or like the piece, the little nuggets of hints that things were messed up that I just really ignored and I chose not to see.
I want to jump in with a question, if you don't mind. You know, this has to do with the dating life since then, because, you know, it's the reason is that before we went on the air, and I think I told you, that I have, I think it was like Barbara has a hard time talking on the phone, but I have a hard time with text messages. They make me anxious because it's like, oh God, I just want to, my natural instinct is want to call the person and talk to them on the phone. And what it is that this has to do with dating, because what happens all the time when I'm talking to somebody that I would like to get to know on a dating basis, they never want to talk on the phone. It's always be a text message. And the problem with that is that it opens up a whole room of, like, the person faking, you know, not knowing if they're really, really a person, you understand? Once I get the person on the phone, I know that the person is – I'm able to tell that the person is real. Does that make sense?
Totally makes sense. I mean, I think that like throughout my time after divorce, I mean, I've definitely dated a lot and explored a lot. And so I understand your hesitation to really get to know somebody via text, because there is a lot of authentic people out there. But I think also, I think when part of my best advice for that is that, you know, you can't try and put a round peg in a square hole. You know what I mean? So if you make the suggestion of talking and they're resistant, then instead of trying to force it, just find somebody who feels comfortable in that arena, just like you. Because ultimately, I think that we are all, especially as we get older, we all have our own issues, right? There is no such thing as a perfect person. And so really, it's not about finding perfection. It's finding somebody whose messed up stuff is in line with your messed up stuff. So if their tendency is to not talk on the phone and not be communicative and hide behind like a facade of a profile or text messaging or whatever, and that's not your style, then my suggestion is, you know, next, you know, move on. There's a million people in this world, and find the one that
fits. Do you want to comment on that, Barbara?
I just said keep looking. I agree with Carrie 100%. Keep on looking, Johnny. Don't try to fit them into your peg. Like she said, it's not going to work. And you have enough background to realize that, Johnny. And yeah, because he'll find one person and then try to make that one work. Why? Why try to find something that works? It's going to work. It's going to connect. You're going to move on until you find where it just does connect, and that spark. Doesn't that spark feel so good when you find that, Carrie?
It sure does, you know, and that's like the magic of life, you know? I mean, like love is life's magic. And, you know, we can all like try and quote unquote make things work, you know, but personally, I feel like, you know, when you find the right person, it's not like you don't give it any effort anymore, but there is a quality of effortlessness about it, if that's a word, but it just kind of clicks, you know? And again, it's about finding somebody whose messed up stuff is the same as your messed up stuff, you know, and finding that person that like is the yin to your yang. And you gotta, I mean, I know I have had to kiss a lot of frogs, and I'm still kissing frogs, okay? But, you know, you still gotta kiss the frogs, because it's gonna make, that's the journey, you know. All the frogs are going to make the accomplishment of finding a prince or a princess that, like, that much more worth it. You know what I mean?
Yes. But back to how the friends are telling you, oh, you don't deserve that, to be cheated on and all of that. Yes, you know that. But, okay, you can't hear all of the negative because you still have to make this work as, because he's the father of your children. You can't hear
exactly
all the negative. And, yes, and make him into a complete villain because you now still have a connection with this man forever. How did you deal with that to make him still, here's your father? I mean, your children were so young. Now it's been 6 years later. Tell us how you dealt with that.
I mean, you know, first of all, it was really freaking difficult, to be honest with you. But the truth of the matter was, is that my kids were so young, and I had heard all of these terrible stories about divorced parents where, you know, the girls getting married, because I have two daughters, and the girls, one of the kids is getting married, and they're struggling on how are they going to have both of their parents at their wedding, and because their parents hate each other and won't even be in the same room. And I just didn't want that to be the narrative between my kids' lives. And I also knew that at some point they were going to find out about why we got divorced someday. And I didn't want them to say, oh, well, my mom was so bitter and hateful and she created this, you know, and she could never get over it. That wasn't the narrative I wanted to create for them. I wanted them to look back at me and say, we had no idea that she went through all this stuff. And I can't believe the sacrifices that she made to create a life for us, that we are allowed to have like a relationship with both of our parents and to be awed at my strength and level of commitment to them.
Yes.
And so,
oh,
after
wow.
We
glad you were such a young age and you were able to come to that realization, because it's so very hurtful when you're a child, because you love your dad, you love your mom. And when one of them is talking so poorly of the other, that hurts them to the core, because that happened to me. You know, if my mom says something against my dad to her girlfriend and they think, oh, she's young, she probably didn't even hear. I remember being on a dock one day and my mom was saying some mean things about my dad, and I had no choice but to just jump in the water and swim away. And that, I felt so lonely. I felt so alone as a child, and you didn't make your children go through that.
No, and you know, there was a few things that I did that were, I mean, I don't even know how I did them, because I just forced myself. It's not like you all of a sudden, you know, snap your fingers and you're okay. You know, it's a long process. And I remember like my kids' birthday parties, as my ex ended up marrying the woman that he had the affair with. And so, you know, at his birthday parties, I didn't want to have separate birthday parties and be like, this is your dad's birthday party and this is my birthday party. And now you have to have two parties because we can't be in the same room together. So we would have like a birthday party together so that their mom and dad could be in the same room, which was the whole idea in my head of what I wanted to create. But the process of actually making that happen was so freaking hard, you know? And there were so many times where I wore sunglasses the whole time because I was like on the brink of tears, because I'm looking at this man who seemingly has this happy life with this new younger model. And you know, I'm there standing alone and he's surrounded by family. And I don't have anybody. And so
was she with you? Was she nice? Did you get along with her? That's a big issue right there.
I mean, I think that at first there was a lot of resentment on my part. And I think that there was, that's not true. Well, that is true, but I think there was a lot of resentment on all of our parts. You know, there was a lot of blame going around on his part and my part. My blame was obvious. His blame was a little less understandable. You know, and we didn't, we had some pretty big blows for the first couple of years, but, you know, over time, we really have gotten to this place where we are all like good friends, not friends in the idea of like, we go out on a Friday night just to chill, but friends in the way that we co-parent our kids and we talk on a regular basis about what's going on with the kids and their schools, what are some of the things that are coming up that we need to, you know, address as a parental unit. And that would have never happened had I not forced myself into those situations and just grinned and bared it, because that allowed me the strength to be able to, it's so many things. It allowed me the strength to be able to be in those situations. It allowed me the strength to find where my boundaries were, to learn to stand up for myself, to be able to stand on my own 2 feet alone in a room and still keep my head up high. And that's
invaluable. Because all of this, that's wonderful. Through all of this, okay, you really found yourself.
Yes, absolutely. That was the main thing. And I rediscovered what made me happy. I rediscovered, like, I just started trying new things because I had no idea. I didn't even spend any time with myself, you know? So I had all this free time and I didn't even know what to do. So I just started doing the things that I thought would bring me joy. And sometimes they were new things and I'm like, I don't really like this. I'm not going to do that again. And sometimes there were wonderful things where I'm like, wow, I really enjoy this. I'm going to do this a lot more. But that process of discovery was a beautiful thing.
You were hit with a major, major blow where, because earlier you were saying, this was my life. I thought, okay, I'm married. Everything's set. I'm going to be with this person forever. And you were seeing it so differently. What a shock. And, oh, can I ask you, how did you find out about the affair?
Oh, well, this is a great but kind of long story. So, you know, my ex decided on our 8-year wedding anniversary that he was, quote unquote, lost in our relationship out of the blue and decides that he's going to get an Airbnb for the weekend. And I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. This is coming completely out of the blue. We've never actually talked about like getting divorced or separating before. So I was like really caught off guard and didn't know what was going on. I thought he had just turned 40.
Did you say locked or lost in the relationship, he felt?
Lost, L-O-S-T.
Okay, so he felt lost. This is what he told you. I'm lost.
Yes.
I need a getaway. I'm going to rent this Airbnb. And you were, like, really caught off guard?
Yeah, really caught off guard. Super, and he was, like, he's a silver spoon kind of guy. Like, grew up on the mean streets of Brentwood. So, you know, he had rented a room in a shared apartment with another couple, which was completely out of character for him. So I was already like, this doesn't make any sense. So he ends up staying there for like 2 months. And he's coming, and I'm trying to keep the, you know, consistency with the kids. So he's coming, you know, maybe every other morning or every other night just to like either help with getting them ready or help with bedtimes and stuff. And I'm thinking that since he just turned 40, maybe he's going through like a midlife crisis or something. I was just completely confused. And then finally, and we were in couples counseling at that point, and he kept saying weird things in therapy, like, you know, I'm Superman in the bedroom. And I'm like, where the hell are you getting that from? You know, or, you know, if we get divorced, everything is mine and nothing is yours. And at that point, a light bulb went off in my head. And I was like, I really need to start investigating our finances because it sounds to me like he's pretty serious about this. I don't think that this is a midlife crisis and I really need to get my ducks in a row. So I emailed our money manager and we had like a savings account that we never used except for like big purchases, maybe once a year. So I just said, can you email me all of the withdrawals over the last 2 years? And he did, and there was only like four, but one of them was a purchase on February, like early February for at Tiffany. And I was like, that's weird. It was right before Valentine's Day. I thought, well, I don't think he got me anything from Tiffany. So I looked at our bank account and realized that he gave me a Burke Williams gift card. And so I was like, he definitely didn't give me anything from Tiffany. So I just took a screen grab of the purchase and I emailed it to him and I said, any idea what this is? And so he didn't respond right away, which was out of character. And he said, when he did respond, he said, we can talk about this when I get home. So I was like, I think I just caught him. So when he gets back to the house, he's putting our oldest daughter to sleep. At the time, I was still breastfeeding my youngest daughter, so I put her to bed, but she's a lot less, takes a lot less time to go to sleep. And I'm sitting there stewing over, like, the idea of, like, I can't believe that he is cheating on me, you know? And so I hear his phone ring in the closet and his jacket pocket, and I'd never gone through his phone before, and I decided that I was going to go and check it because I was like, you know what? I mean, if I'm going to do this, now's the freaking time, and I want to have some information, some ammunition. So I go into his jacket pocket, and in the jacket pocket is a letter that's addressed to me. And in that letter is a, it's like basically his confession that he's been having an affair, but who it is and how long it's been going on is none of my concern. So I'm thinking, like, you know, this expletive, he's not going to, like, just bow out like this and give me no information and be completely in control. So I go into his phone and I check, like, all of his emails, everything. I can't find anything. So finally I was like, you know what, maybe I'll look at the draft. So I looked at the draft and I found a letter, an email that was never sent to his former assistant that basically was like, give me 3 more months before I leave my wife, blah, blah, blah. So I immediately sent that to myself. And then I was thinking, well, now I know who it is. It's been going on for a while. Now I need to figure out where the financial stuff is. So I go out to the garage where we keep all of our financial information and everything is gone. So I was like, where would he keep it if I were him? I was like, well, he's basically homeless. He's probably living with her. I'm going to go check his car. So I go out to his car, and lo and behold, I see a complete file folder of all of our financial information. So I take that inside, and I hide it in a closet, and then he finally comes out, and he's like, okay, are you ready? And he hands me the letter that I've already read. So I'm pretending to read this letter. Meanwhile, I know that I have the text message that he, or the email that I had sent to myself in my phone. So I read the letter. I put it down. I said, I have something that I would like to read to you. And I read the text or the email that I had forwarded to myself that says, dear mistress, I just need 3 more months to leave my wife. And his face just went white. And he was like, I guess somebody has been going through my phone. And of course, you know, I was like, get out of here. I don't want anything to do with you. You need to leave right now. So he leaves. But then once he gets to his car, he realized that I took all of the financial information. And so he comes back to the house, but I knew he was going to come back. So I'm like standing there holding the deadbolt, like not allowing him to come in. And I had already locked all the doors. So finally he leaves. And then I go into the closet, I find the financial information, and it has all of his passwords for all of his email accounts. So, of course, I log into them and forward every single email between him and her. So I found out how long it's been going down. I found out when it started. I found out, like, all of the correspondence they've had, that they've been plotting this whole, like, exit for a long time. And it was really a powerful moment for me because it was like I wasn't a victim of my circumstance. In that moment, it
good
was like I
thinking.
Took role.
Good thinking. You did it, you know, because I'm sure at the moment when you first saw the first thing, your heart sunk and the worst feeling happened to you in your stomach. If you really, really loved him, I mean, did you really, really love him?
I mean, at that time, I was, to be honest with you, no. I didn't love him at that time because he was been putting me through hell for the last 2 years, which is how long the affair had been going on. And even though I didn't know about the affair, there isn't a certain emotional abuse that happens when you are in love with somebody else and married. And there was a lot of things that were that he was doing that were really.
Yeah. Wait, let her finish.
Okay, sorry.
No, let her finish.
No, I
yeah,
said sorry.
Yeah, so at that point, I was really confused and also really hurt. And it was like, it all kind of made sense in that moment, you know? And I just was like, you know, how could I, at first I was like, how could I not seen this, you know? And then I was like, well, there is no way in hell I am going down like this, you know? And I just, and that's what like fueled me. I was like, I'm not going to be a damsel in distress in this situation. I'm going to be something else. I don't know what it is, but I'm going to be something else.
Good for you.
Well,
okay, go
what
ahead,
I was gonna
John.
Say is- You said that you were in counseling at the time. Now, does that didn't mean that you had seen signs of things getting bad?
Yeah, I mean, like, he had moved out 2 months prior, so I was, like, really confused about what was going
what?
On, you know? And so...
Moved out.
Well, they were having a rocky marriage. They were having a rocky marriage. Doesn't mean that she knew that it's an affair. But do you wish that he would have just been... honest and straightforward from the beginning.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That would have been so valuable because then we could have talked about it, you know, like actually had a constructive conversation and there would have been a better understanding. And there were so many times where I asked him. I even at one point was getting so frustrated before I actually found any proof. I was like, you are having an affair with this person, aren't you? Why can't you just admit it? And he still like lied to my face about it. And so I was like, there were so many opportunities for him to be honest, and he just couldn't.
Wow. Well, hopefully he has learned a big lesson in life about being honest. And you, it sounds like you did just the right thing, and I'm glad that empowered you. And you're a lot like me because I would have been empowered, but some women, I'm not saying they're wrong for this, they would have completely fallen apart. They would have just been sobbing, and they would not have thought about all those things that you did because it's valuable to have that information, which he did not want you to see or have. And you had it. I do know in California, judges frown really big time against men who do women wrong. For some reason in California. Did you find this to be true?
Well, California is a no-fault state. So that meant that there was nothing, there was no penalty for adultery. There was no lenience in that area. We didn't actually end up going to court, although we did have like a lengthy divorce kind of proceeding. I waited until the day that we were supposed to see a judge to pretty much negotiate terms of our initial kind of divorce and separation so that I could maintain like enough money to maintain our household and still allow myself to free. I'm sorry?
Your lifestyle?
Yeah. Like I just wanted, because I've been a television producer for a really long time, and I was running shows at that time, and I was working like 80 hours a week. And so I knew that I wanted to change my life and I wanted to do something different, but I didn't know what that was. So I needed the financial to be able to figure it out. So I negotiated at that time to the financial freedom to figure it out. And he was kind of in a desperate situation. So I did what was best for me. You know, and I did what was best for our kids to maintain consistency. And I'm really proud of myself for that. And it gave me a lot of time to figure out like what I really wanted in my life and what I needed. And it also allowed me to become a single mom for the first time and practice doing that because I'd never done it before. And, you know, realize that it's possible. Like I can do this and it's not, I don't need anybody to hold my hand through parenting. Like I can do it all on my own. And now it's like, I love that. I love being a single parent. I love not having to compromise or ask permission. I love being able to go where I want and do what I want and wake up. If we want to have a lazy day on Saturday until noon, then we can do that. Like it's wonderful. It's beautiful.
I hear you on that. I totally hear you. You call the shots now. So it doesn't have to be horrible, everybody. It doesn't. It actually can even be better.
I think my life, I'm at this point in my life, I'm grateful I'm so grateful. It sucked going through it, don't get me wrong. But I'm so grateful that it happened because it allowed me to find my own happiness within myself that wasn't dependent on anybody else, and to create a life that I wanted that is centered around me and my kids and what makes us happy, and creating a family unit that might not look like everybody else's, but just because it doesn't look like everybody else's does not mean that it's not a family.
Emails that you went through one by one, I'm sure, with probably a lot of tears, but with strength and with feeling that your mother was with you. Am I correct by saying that?
Yeah.
Do you feel that she was there with you?
Oh, for sure. I feel like she's with me through every step of the way. She's like the little voice in my head that cheers me on.
Yeah, that's how I feel about my mom. And I didn't mean to, make her look bad. She said a couple of mean things about my dad. It could be a normal thing for women to talk to their girlfriend about what an a-hole he is. But I'm glad that you never have put your kids through that because, like I said, it's very hurtful. But when you went through all those emails, did you find anything that was despairing you as far as horrible and rude comments about yourself that they were talking down about you? Was there anything in there like that?
To be honest with you, I don't remember. A lot of the emails that I read were more about their love for each other and how much they care and for each other and trying to plot some sort of an exit strategy.
So why was he having a brand new baby with you during this time? Long affair.
Yeah.
How long was
mm-hmm.
this affair? Through your pregnancy.
Well, I was 6 months pregnant.
Well, it started when you were 6 months pregnant?
Mm-hmm.
And does she have children?
She has yes, they just had a baby about a year and a half ago together.
Okay, and then what was
horrible.
Her story, though? Why? Because the other woman who is breaking a marriage up, how horrible is that? How does she feel about herself? Did she ever do a one-on-one with you and tell you that she's sorry? Is she sorry? Or is she just saying, hey, I love him, whatever happens, happens?
I mean, I think that initially there was a lot of, denial and, blame that occurred. I think that what really changed the relationship between all of us was them having their own kid. And we've never really talked about this, but I think that when she was going through the process of being pregnant and having a kid, I think it really allowed her a sense of understanding of where I was and to be more compassionate, towards me. And actually now we have a great relationship. Like, I talk to her more than I talk to him. Like, if I have an issue with the girls, and she's a great stepmom to our kids.
Good.
Like, she's wonderful. The girls absolutely adore her. She treats them like they're her own. She's like the room mom of my oldest daughter's class. I mean, she does the things that I have no interest in doing or just am really terrible at. So I'm grateful for having her in their lives because now we're just, they get three parents, not just two.
Yeah, I think it's all good. I think that's just great. And I am so proud of you, just meeting you here over the radio lines. I feel so proud of you that you were able to be that strong to open yourself up, because so many women would be so mad about this forever and hold so much resentment. It would eat so much fuel to them to say, well, see, that's why I had to leave her. You know what I mean? That's why we had to have an affair. No, you didn't give them any out like that. You rose above. You took the high road. And good for you. Right, Johnny?
And really?
Mm-hmm. Right.
it really stems from finding my own happiness, you know, because as I became happier in myself, it was easier for me happy for them because I was like, I was grateful for finding that, you know.
Is your dad alive?
No, my dad passed when I was 2.
Oh, right. You did say that. And mm-hmm. my daughter lost her dad when she was almost 2. So tell me a little bit about that, your relationship with your dad, even though
I mean, honestly,
he was
I
gone.
Don't even remember.
What is that like?
Well,
I know,
that
but
was
like what are you making it now? Because you feel your mom, why can't you feel your dad?
Well, there's a couple things. Like, first of all, my dad was a professional golfer, and he was, like, at the brink of, you know, going on the PGA Tour, and he passed away, and he was pretty much, like, a local legend. Like, he was very popular in our small town in Florida, and, you know, even to this day, people will come up to me and tell me how amazing my dad was, even though I don't remember him. So I always had this sense of, like, greatness that surrounded me as a kid, which really influenced me to be something great. And it also affected my decision making with how I proceeded through the co-parenting situation, because I wanted to have a dad when I was young, you know, and
yeah.
I missed that relationship, you know, and so I wanted my girls to have that, you know, I wanted them to have a dad. I
yeah.
wanted them to have somebody that they were close to. I knew that that was important, and that fueled a lot of the decision-making that I made for myself and for them, because I didn't want them to miss out on the things that I missed out on.
Okay, because you just, hey, I'm going to get a good man, and he's going to be the dad that I never had for my children. And this was a big thing in the back of your mind, obviously, your whole life. So
mm-hmm.
you did it.
Yeah.
And maybe
I did.
You looked for the wrong guy. Like we were talking earlier, don't just try to fit the round peg into the square. Do you think you did that early on in this certain relationship, or was it just magic?
I mean, I think that there was a semblance of that for sure. Like that was always in the back of my head that I wanted somebody that was going to be a good dad to my future children. Absolutely. I think that I was also different. You know, I was very surface. I didn't, you know, when I married him because he was my best friend and we had so much fun together. And at that point in my life, you know, I got married when I was 29, and at that point in my life, that's all that really mattered. I didn't have a lot of, you know, trials and tribulations in my life. You know, it was about, like, what are we going to do this weekend, and what fun stuff can we get into? It wasn't like, how are you going to support me when my mom dies, or how are you going to, you know, support me through miscarriages, or when my sister, like, has open-heart surgery. Like, those conversations never even existed, and we never really talked about them because we didn't even think to. But, like, life teaches you certain things, and it tests your relationship with yourself and with your partner. And as we grew through our relationship, my life was causing a lot of traumatic experiences to occur, with like my mom getting cancer and my sister having health problems and all of these things. And most people aren't affected by that at such a young age, but I was, you know. And so I think that I made the right choice for me at the right time for the person that I was at that time. But I grew as a person, and as I grew, I outgrew the relationship that I was in. And since the relationship has ended, I've been on like a nonstop growth mission to just always become a better, more complete, happier version of my best self.
Do you think differently about marriage in general?
Oh, for
just
sure.
To say, hey, okay, marriage means forever. Well, it wasn't forever. I mean, that must be a big shift in somebody's life to realize it's not forever. How do you make that okay?
I think that, like, having to do it all on my own, especially at such a young age with such young children, made me realize that, like, it's not essential for me to have a partner. Like, I just bought a townhouse all on my own. And, you know, it wasn't even essential for me to have a partner to do that. So I've kind of realized that all of the things that, you know, my narrative growing up of like the things that you need in order to be successful, I don't need a partner to do any of it, you know? It's so like marriage to me is something that's, I mean, I don't know if I'll ever get married again. I don't know if I really need to. I don't know if I believe in a happily ever after. I kind of just live every day as it comes. And if I want to spend time with this person, then I spend time with them. And then if I don't want to spend time with them, then I don't. And I don't feel any kind of like neediness or necessity in and around that.
I feel so much the same. I really do. But I actually am probably the person who is going through the midlife crisis, because if you live to 100, let's say, I'm definitely in my midlife. And for the first time, the last 3 years, I have not cared to go find a man to complete me. I'm complete already. So, gosh, if we only knew this when we're in our 20s or even 30s or even 40s. And when you said he may have been going through his midlife crisis, maybe, but 40 is pretty early for that to happen with a man. I wouldn't give him that. But it's crazy, isn't it, life, how all of this happens and then you come to your conclusion and you're so fulfilled, you're so happy, you're so whole, which is amazing. And I think this is an amazing message to the world, to relationships,
well, that's,
to people.
Yeah, and that's really what I've been sharing post-divorce, which, like, there's no yellow brick road of post-divorce. You know, there's no narrative of, like, this is what you're supposed to do. And the only thing that I ever heard was, like, either find a man and hurry up and get married or live alone with your 12 cats. And I wasn't going to do either one of those things. And so I, from the very moment that I started, that I got, got divorced and became single, I just started sharing my story. It started with my divorce story that I shared on here. And then I've just been basically documenting my life, the goods, the bads, the ups and the downs ever since then. And the biggest response that I've gotten has been of, a level of inspiration, because it's lonely when you think that, like, you're not doing it right or that you have to fit into this mold. And so many people don't realize that there is another way, that you don't have to have all of these things to be happy. And that's the thing that I want to share the most, is like, happiness starts with you. Like, you are responsible for your happiness, and like, everything else can add to that happiness, but you get to decide from here on out what that looks like, and nobody can define that for you. And that's
the reason
why. Do you
think it's good to be, I don't want to interrupt you, but good to be spiritual? Are you spiritual to have rules? Say if you're a Christian, you have all these rules to abide by, so therefore your eye won't be roaming to your secretary or whatever the case may be. But we're only human. How do you feel about rules and spirituality? And do you feel like, well, if we were more spiritual, if we were more connected that way, would this happen? Like, why did it happen? Why did this guy do this to you? I want to know. Straight out answer.
I definitely am spiritual. I wouldn't say that I'm religious, but I think that I believe in karma and the things that are, you know, life kind of directs you in the way that you're supposed to go. And I think a lot of us don't pay attention to life signals when we're going through it. Again, like square peg, round hole kind of thing. But I think that the reason why this happened to me was so I could be on a podcast just like I am right now, and to live a life of example, and to show others that, you know, there's a different way. There's an absolute different way that you can travel in life that can lead to happiness, and you don't need anybody else but yourself to do it.
Cool. So you were a TV producer. Are you still doing that? And
yes,
are you doing more to help people with your story? And tell us what you're doing today with that.
Yeah, so I took a couple of years off to explore different options and realized that I love telling stories. And so I came back to television producing, and I am, like, in love with it again. And I have a new appreciation for my job and a new love for it. And in that process, I really started exploring other avenues like social media, and I shared my story on Instagram a lot, and then I wanted a bigger platform. Like, I found that Instagram was pretty limiting in the story that I could tell. There was only so much you can write in a blurb. And so I started a blog called Diary of a Divorcee, where I write about things like co-parenting or dating, or I wrote a book called Memoirs of a Dating Divorcee, which is I talk about a new way to date called Dating in the Gray. And
A
TikTok, Diary of a Divorcee.
Dating in the Gray. That's clever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so really it's like people date either in the black or white. They're either they want an immediate relationship or they don't want any relationship at all. And Dating in the Gray is about finding that middle ground. So I started this book called Memoirs of a Dating Divorcee because I was introduced to a man who I met online who was actually ironically from the same hometown that I was from. And I felt like we were dating in a very traditional way. Like, by third date, he's introducing me to his friends. It feels like he wants to, like, become boyfriend and girlfriend, like, overnight. And at that point, I was just, like, tired of doing the same old thing. So I kind of was like, listen, if you want to do this the same old way, I'm just not interested. And he's like, I'm not interested in doing that. So I was like, okay, what are you interested in doing? And he told me about this idea of Dating in the Gray, which is, and I thought it was so logical that I couldn't help but give it a try. And what he said was, you know, I believe that it takes 6 months to know somebody. I completely agreed with him. He's like, and I don't commit to somebody that I don't know. And he's also said, you know, I think that people should choose the best choice, not the only choice. So I take 6 months and I date people. I'll date multiple people, and I'm open and honest about that with everybody that I date. And I tell them that I am going to be dating multiple people. And if we reach the 6 month mark and we decide to have, like, a conversation about a elevated level of commitment, then we can have that conversation. But in the meantime, I'm going to get to know you and see who you truly are. And I was like, I have never done anything like that before. I've always been told, like, you have to only date one person at a time, and you have to get them to commit, and all of these things. And I was like, I don't even know if I can do that. Like, I've never, like, I don't know if this is a good idea. I don't know if this is a bad idea. I have no idea what this is going to be like. But I was like, if I want to tell a story that's true and authentic, I think that this is probably it. And so I started writing about my journey, like, journey through that. And, like,
about sex? Because you cannot just give your body to, I'm not talking about you in general, for a woman to date a lot, you have to have your boundaries with sex, because men, of course, they're going to want you. And maybe that's why they try to move so quickly. So how do you tell them, or what do you tell them? What is benchmark?
I mean,
6 months for sex as well?
I took it one day at a time, and there was a point where I was having sex with, like, two different people. And to be honest
with
you, and I write about it.
That's not that bad, Carrie.
I mean, I don't think so either. We're grown women. We are not the Virgin Mary. To try and pretend that we don't have sex is just an absolute lie. So
right.
I was dating the person that introduced me. I call him Mr. Gray because I make up nicknames for every person.
Mm-hmm.
So I call him Mr. Gray. So I was dating Mr. Gray. I was open and honest with him. He knew that I was dating other people. I started dating a guy named the writer, you know, and, like, there's a progression to each relationship. And to be honest with you, I didn't know how I was going to feel about it, you know, and even talking about it, you know, it always comes with, like, a little bit of shame and guilt, but it's true. It was true. And there came a point with the writer where he was like, and I told him from the very beginning what the deal was. Like, I'm going to be dating other people. I encourage you to date other people. Here's my dating philosophy. But I think that people make assumptions and they assume that they're the one and only, even if you tell them that they're not. And that's exactly what he did. And when he finally said something where it's like, if you start dating somebody else, I think we should just let each other know. But I had already been dating somebody else, so I let him know. And as soon as he found out I was actively dating somebody, he was like, peace out. So it did come with, like, some pitfalls, but I didn't feel guilty about it, to be honest with you, because I was honest. I was absolutely transparent and honest. And when you operate from that place, like, there's nothing to feel ashamed or guilty about.
Okay, so this is what happened with that guy. He's like, I'm out. He couldn't handle it. But mm-hmm. what normally does happen when you're dating and you tell a man straight out, that's how it is, I'm dating other people, does that make them try harder with you normally?
To be honest,
I just feel like it's not normal for the guy to say, I'm opting out. I feel like the guy would be like, wow, this is a strong woman. She knows what she wants, and she's in control. That's what I would think a man would say. Do they want you more when you tell them that?
Well, you know, it's an interesting thing because I wasn't sure. I thought that their competitive vibe would trigger, and then they would go all, like, you know, lion-like. But
right.
to be honest with you, as soon as I took the level of expectation of a relationship off the table and pretty much told them, listen, I just want to take some time so we can get to know each other, it was as if they had a big sigh of freaking relief at the table. And then as soon as I was open and vulnerable with them, they became more vulnerable. They allowed me to see more of them. It was as if, like, I took off this, like, guarded layer, and they all of a sudden instantly became more comfortable.
And no game playing at all.
I mean, don't get me wrong. There's always inauthentic people out there. And I have, like, an entire book full of disaster dating stories. So, no, just because you are honest doesn't mean that they're capable of being honest. But it's a great way to be able to test somebody's authenticity and their level of honesty. Because I'm not interested in being with anybody who cannot be honest with me. Especially if I'm giving you permission and being honest myself and leading by example.
Do you tell them this on the first date, or is that too soon? Is the first date just to get to know if you even have any kind of connection, or is the first date to talk about what you expect with your dating relationship?
I tell them on the first date. I don't want to lead them to believe anything that isn't true. I do not want to deceive anybody. I tell them straight off the bat, this is what's going on. This is how I date. Because to me, if you don't want to enter in that situation, that's totally okay. Some people don't. They don't feel comfortable. And just because I feel comfortable doesn't mean that you have to. But, like, I don't feel like I want to be honest from the very beginning and have open communication. And if I'm going to do that, I have to be honest on the first date, from the first jump.
Well, there was a show called The Bachelor or The Bachelorette, right? They're dating 25 people at once, and they get, it's very emotional because you can have feelings for a couple of people at the same time, or three or four. You can. But that must be very difficult. That must be so hard. So,
and you
here
know
I
what?
Am.
It is hard. And especially when you know that person that you have feelings for also is dating other people. And you know.
Ooh, I don't know if I can handle that. Oh, my gosh.
It was difficult.
This is a
That's
lot.
Exactly what I write about. I've never been in that situation before. It was hugely confronting for me. But it was also like one of those things where it tested my level of strength. And I had to constantly remind myself of my own self-worth and my own value and what I brought to the table. And if you're not a confident woman, then you'll never be able to to, you'll never be able to survive in that situation. But I'm all about being strong and creating growth and being secure in myself. And so I constantly was like, you know what, this person may have their attention at the moment, but this is who I am. And I'm freaking awesome. So if he doesn't see that, then Zaya freaking Nara. And you know what? Every time I'm not the one, I've been the chosen one, you know?
Okay. So for somebody who is just starting to date again and they have their first date and they're not dating anybody else because they just started.
Mm-hmm.
Should they tell them, well, I'm not dating anybody else, but if I want to, I will? Do you tell them that?
Yeah, I think so. I think establishing expectations from the very beginning is super important because I think we all, especially dating now, we all enter into relationships with a level of an assumption, right? Like I know so many of my female girlfriends who will start dating somebody and then they're like, you know, a couple months in, they're like, hey, you know, I want to be exclusive. And then they find out that the other person has been dating other people this entire time and they get really upset about it and they feel deceived. But the reason why they feel deceived is because they never had the conversation. There was like, maybe the guy assumed that she was dating other people and she assumed that he wasn't. So really it's just a level of miscommunication where they didn't actually talk about their expectations. They didn't lay the groundwork of how this is going to go. And that creates hurt feelings.
And you shouldn't be afraid of telling the person this. Like to be afraid that maybe this is going to turn them off if you really see them and you like them so much. You should just not be afraid of turning them off by saying, well, you know, I am dating right now, so you're not going to be the only one. Just don't do that. Just go right in and be yourself and be strong.
Yeah, I personally think that if a person doesn't support you in what you want, then they're not the person for you. If they really are interested in you, then they will enter into whatever situation that you want because they are interested in getting to know you. And you're not telling them, hey, I never want to have a relationship with you or I never want to be exclusive with you. What you're telling them is that I want to take some time to get to know you.
Yes. What if you would have taken that approach with your ex-husband? Do you think it would have been different?
I think so because he was the only – I met him 3 weeks after I moved to L.A. He was the only person I dated when I moved here. I had no level of comparison. I'd never dated anybody in L.A. I never even dated in L.A. So maybe if I had a greater level of comparison, maybe I would have made some different choices. But I don't regret my decision at all because, like, the way that my life has gone, I feel like this is my destiny. But – I think it's helpful for everybody. That person that they felt the feels for on the first date could be the one that they end up marrying. But there's never gonna be, I don't feel like you're ever gonna regret taking your time and investing in your options. And if you choose that person in the end, then you know
be happy that you want to get to know them.
That's what I think. I feel like it's a logical choice. I mean, I think that makes complete sense. That doesn't mean that you have to have sex with everybody. Like, you get to make your own rules with that. You know what I mean? Like, if you choose
right.
to date people for 6 months and decide not to have sex with any of them, go, girl. You know, if you decide to have sex with all of them, go, girl. You get to make the rules. But,
Do you think it's bad to have sex on the first date or second date?
I don't think that there is such thing as, quote, unquote, bad, you know? I think that you have
right.
to do what right to you. And as long as it's coming from an authentic place within yourself and that you're not doing it for anybody else but yourself, I say go with your gut.
Okay. Wow. And you put this into your blog. And where can we find that? Tell the listeners where we can find you.
It's so my blog is www.diaryofadivorcee.com. And my TikTok is Diary of a Divorcee. And my Instagram is my name, Carrie Pyle Lawrence.
Okay, Carrie Pyle Lawrence. Nice name, by the way.
Y-L-E.
Oh, wow. I can't wait to join in and read your blog because I took enough time off, okay, a few years, and I love who I have become to where I can take care of myself. I don't need a man to take care of anything, and I think that's a great place to be because we make the wrong decision when we are needy, say financially,
we'll make the wrong decision.
What was that?
You took the words right out of my mouth. When you're desperate or operating from a place of need, then you invite things into your life that it causes you to settle. And we're not at a place anymore where we want to settle. We want to find the right person, not the only person. So I think you should date in the gray and tell me how it goes.
Oh, date in the gray. I love this. Okay, so we have the diaryofadivorcee.com. We have Dating in the Gray, which is – Dating in the Gray, is that your book?
Yeah. It's called Memoirs of a Dating Divorcee, but it's all about dating in the gray. It's basically a first-person account of what my experience of dating in the gray has been like.
Are you writing it now, or is this something we can go out and buy right now?
It's I actually publish it on my blog. So you can read the first eight chapters. I still have two more chapters to write, and the second the ninth chapter will probably come out in the next 2 weeks, and then there will be a final chapter after that, and then I'm going to start all over again.
Okay, and your TikTok must be really interesting. I'm very new. In fact, I don't even think I have any followers yet. I'm that new with TikTok.
Well, to be honest with you, I was too up until 2 weeks ago when I started posting some of my disaster dating stories, which I have a lot of them, they went viral. And so now I went from like 100 followers to over 7,000 followers in like a week and a half.
No way. TikTok. Oh, wow. Is that where Johnny found you?
I was just going to say, because I have about 10,000 followers, and it took me a long time to get there. And, I mean, you know, it is interesting because it has a very it's like every TikTok is just fascinating. So I think, Barbara, you should try it out. I would love to do a duet
with
you.
I am trying it out, but I don't have time to log in and do duets much. I don't know if I want to go that far. Maybe I'll try it with you, Johnny, someday. But I think it's just fun to, like, mouth the words or dance routine or anything. I'm a dancer, so to me it seems fun like that. I had to stay off TikTok, Carrie, because my daughter said, that's my platform, mother. I don't want you to do it, you know, because she was going to be embarrassed.
Uh-huh.
So I did. I stayed off of it. But now she doesn't care. She's going to be 15 soon. She's okay with me, you know. So I'm starting it, and I'm exploring it. But obviously, we're finding great people there. Good for you, Johnny, and congratulations on your 10,000 people. He must be over the moon with that. But I have, on Facebook, the normal, 36,000. So, hey, let's make it interesting. Let's not just do a bunch of, like, frivolous stuff everywhere, modeling and sexy stuff everywhere. I think that we can make it our own. That's why I chose this username called, not even my name, Barbara Moore. I call it Babzel from Seattle. Nobody even knows me. So now I can start fresh on a platform where maybe I can make this the real one, the real me.
I think that that's a great idea because there is no person that can be like you. And it's such a wonderful place to be your author. Just don't read the comments.
Okay. But you know what? My dad said that when I did an interview, and it was, it was a crazy interview about a celebrity that I was involved with. And he's like, just don't read the comments. You know what? I can. I'm like the duck with the feather. The water rolls off of it because being in this business, I have to be. I just find it amusing. So I think I can handle it, but that's good advice for other people. But But also there's other things that when we're dating that we shouldn't go and date somebody that we know that we're not going to be able to handle, like me. I have a 15-year-old child. I don't want to get with a guy who has, like, a 5-year-old right now. I've been there, done that 20 years ago, and it didn't work out, not because of the children, but I just, you have to know what you want, need, and your boundaries. Do you think that that is limiting people when they say, okay, I don't want a guy with young kids? Do you think that's limiting? Should we just say, whatever comes my way, maybe it's meant to be?
I mean, I think that you should do what feels best to you. Have the relationship, invite the relationships that make you feel most comfortable. And listen, we live in a very big state. There are a lot of people. So even if you chose, hey, I'd want somebody that has kids over the age of 15, like, your pool is still going to be pretty large. So I wouldn't say that you can't have what you want. I think if that's something that you feel really passionate about, I think you should go after it. I don't think you need to, like, you know, reset your boundaries just so you can be more desirable. Knowing what your boundaries are is what makes you desirable.
Yes, because I know, of course, I would be a wonderful stepmother. Yeah, I could do that. I could be a wonderful cook. But do I really want to? When you were saying earlier, if I want to stay up till 2 a.m. tonight, I can. If I want to get dinner on the table tonight, I will. If I want to order a pizza, I will. You know, I don't want to be regimented. I don't want my man to be like my dad, telling me what to do and a rigid schedule. But that's me. Maybe some women like that. So I like
you. Just have to do what you just have to do what's right for you. But just also remember that you're going to have to kiss a lot of frogs before you can find the right man. Still kissing frogs over here. So,
oh my gosh! You know what I hate the most is when somebody says, "Are you a good kisser? Show me what you've got." I don't like it.
Block that delete. That's that they just want to sex you.
Yeah, they just found out the guy was married.
Yeah, there you go. See, red flag, just like that. Next.
And watch for those, know those, and learn. And you know what?
Yes.
If you're young,
yes,
read your blog and learn that way. Don't go into everything so blindly, because there's people out there that have been there, done that, and are offering advice like you are, Carrie Pye Lawrence. And we want everybody to go on to TikTok and go read your blog and get your book and follow you. And we're so thankful that you came on. And it's not always, and I am getting a little choked up, and that you came on to share your story and about your mom. And you know what? You did experience a lot of loss, a lot of loss. And you have a story to tell that can help people. That is very admirable. And you must feel really good about that.
I do. Honestly, I am grateful to be in this position. And had I not had those struggles, then I probably wouldn't have. And I wouldn't be the woman that I am today. But, you know, it's not how far you fall. It's how you stand back up that really matters.
Yes. And how are your kids today? This is 6 years later. They change every single day, don't they?
Oh, they're wonderful. You know, they're absolutely wonderful. You know, they're being raised in an environment with three loving parents that completely support them 100%. And we all do what's best for the kids, which I think is really important and a testament not just to me, but to their dad and their stepmom. And I think that, like, we did the right things for them, and I'm really proud of that. And I'm
one
proud
more question
of them too.
Good. Yes. I bet they're wonderful kids with a mother like you. I have one more question. Did he ever apologize to you?
No.
That
I
about?
Never had
some weird pride?
Huh?
What's that about? Some weird pride?
I'm not sure, to be honest with you. I think that I'm not sure, honestly. I think it's, I'm not sure. Anything that I say would just be an assumption, and I don't know why he, I think that we, anytime I've tried to enter into the conversation, it's come with like a list of demands of things that I needed to apologize for, and I just don't think a conversation should start like that, you know? So we haven't had that conversation ever, but I would like to at some point, and I hope someday he'll like to also.
Let's hope for that, because I think that that would be then, you know, a healing, a thing that would cause it all to heal.
Yeah, I think so too.
And her too. Her. She owes you an apology.
Well, I think that, you know, her and I have talked about it before, but, you know, it's not something that you can't force something to somebody to do something that they don't want to do, you know, and she knows that it's important and for all of us to move forward. And we, and her and I have talked about it, but he's just, I think that there is just an intense level of pain behind it. And it's just something that he's not ready to face time, you know, and I'm not sure that he'll ever be able to, but at the same time, like, I'm healing myself every single day, and I can't control other people. I can only control what I do for myself. So I'm doing the best thing for myself and my kids every single day.
I think that's great, and that's all we can do. And you're doing more than so many. Hey, Johnny, did you learn a lot today from Carrie?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
Me too. I mean, you know what? I got chills a few times during this show because of realizations, and I think that people really should wake up, read. This is your life, everybody. This is your life. The person that you are going to cohabitate with, this is very serious stuff, and just don't go into it because, oh, well, they have money, or they're my type, or, you know, they're gorgeous, or this or that. God has somebody out there for everybody. I believe in soulmates. Do you believe in soulmates, too?
I think that you can, I'm not sure, actually, maybe. I think that,
well, I'm
I
not
have found a
give up on it.
Of people. I think that I found a number of people that I thought were my soulmates at that point in my life. But as I keep transitioning it through life, I realized that they weren't really my soulmates. So maybe the person that I find to spend my life with, then I will realize that there is a soulmate out there for me. But right now I'm a seasonal soulmate finder.
And when you say you've kissed a lot of frogs, obviously you're not going to kiss somebody that you find repulsive. So isn't dating enjoyable?
I personally love it. That's why I do it. I think it's, I love meeting new people. I'm super extroverted. I'm not afraid to get out there and enjoy like another person's company. And I enter into it with zero expectation. So if there's not a level of attraction or whatever, then it's a new person that I get to meet. And I always learn something about myself in the process. And I learn something about them. And I enjoy that process. I find it to be valuable to learn things about others, especially coming out of COVID and kind of being like closed off in connections in that way. So I think it's valuable, and it doesn't really matter if it's a romantic connection. You never know what it could lead to, you know?
Do you offer to pay half? What's it like out there in LA? Are they paying for us, their men?
I usually offer to pay half on the first date to see like how they'll react. And I don't mind because I'm a strong woman. So, but I think that I always know that there is some chivalry left in the world, and I don't expect a man to take care of me in that way. But it is nice to feel appreciated, especially on the first date, in that way. You know what I mean?
Have you been surprised when you offer to pay half? Have they ever said okay? Sure.
Oh yes.
Where's your credit card?
Uh-huh.
And then do you feel weird, or you're like, okay?
I'm like, okay. Oh, this one time recently, I offered to pay half, but the guy went to the bathroom. And so I didn't want the bartender came over and said, you ready for your check? And I said, when he comes back, because I didn't want to pay the entire bill. I wanted to split it. And he was like, and I explained that to the bartender. And he like looked at me and he's like, why? And I was like, because I don't mind paying half. And I just, but I just don't want to have to pay the whole bill right now. So wait till he comes back. And so when the bartender came back, he already ran his credit card. So like he didn't even give me an to pay half, but he took off half of the drink. So the bill was only like $25.
Well, so it's working. I think it's good to offer so that the man doesn't think, hey, I just bought this expensive dinner. Now you owe me something.
And that's exactly why I always offer, too, so that it's in their control. It's not a level of expectation on my part. It's a level of choice on theirs.
So even though you know the guy across from you might be a millionaire or a billionaire, still offer to pay half so that that really gives them a message that, hey, this dinner doesn't mean you're going to get down my pants tonight.
Well, not only that, but it's like, you know, dating has changed nowadays. And why does, you know, if I'm changing the way that I operate in the dates, you know, then why do I have to expect them to stay the same?
Okay, well, then they cannot always choose the restaurant then. You're going to have to be comfortable in case you have to pay half that you're going to be able to do it, because there's expensive dinners out there, like $500, $700 dinners. And
yeah,
that would be way over.
I was thinking about that because, you know, like if you ask a woman, not to cut you off, but like, you know, asking a woman out on a date, where would you like to go? The Ritz-Carlton.
You know, I mean, we are living in LA, Carrie, right?
For
There's
sure.
women out there that just are hungry for food, and they do this.
Yeah.
They get on a dating site just because they're hungry.
I mean, that's ridiculous. And if you're dating to get a free meal, then you shouldn't even be dating at all. Like, go to the soup kitchen. They have free food there, too.
They do. But they do. Okay, so I'm going to let you know, if I have a date in the next week or two, is there a way for a person to write in to your blog or converse with you about their experiences throughout dating?
Of course. My email address is on my blog, so you can always reach out to me that way, or you can message me on Instagram, or don't message me on TikTok because I don't read any of the comments.
Okay. Right. That's good.
Message me through Instagram, and there's also a message feature on my blog. But I definitely want to hear about your dating experiences because I think it's fascinating, and I love hearing other people's experiences, and especially if you're going to try dating in the gray, I would absolutely love to hear about your journey.
I will let you know because I was looking through all of my old messages, and I see that there is this guy that has been trying to date me so nicely, too, for a year. I wasn't even reading all of my messages carefully because on all these platforms, we have so many messages that are maybe from our friends, but mixed in with tons of strangers too, thousands and hundreds of messages a day. I missed this one. So I was looking through and then I said, okay, sure. You seem like a nice guy. Why not? I'll have a midday coffee. That's what he wanted.
Yeah. And Johnny, what would you think if a woman came to you on the first date and told you, hey, I just want to date non-exclusively for 6 months and get to know each other? What would your reaction as
that
a man
be? Fine. I mean, because I haven't had much dating experience. So that'd be okay with that. I mean, at least there's some, but I'm curious about something. Now, what do you say if one of the guys asks you out on a date and then you have a date scheduled for that night, what do you say?
I give them a time frame.
Okay.
I say, oh, I can meet you, but I can only meet you for a drink because I have to be somewhere at this time. So if not, if that doesn't work, then we can meet a different day.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love it. Now
honestly,
I'm even more excited to get back into this. Yeah.
And if they ask me if I have another date, I say yes, because it's true. And if they don't like it, then they don't have to meet me.
Exactly.
So it's not about trying to, so dating is not about trying to hide yourself in the eyes of others. Dating is about being your true self in the eyes of others. And so when you're honest from the very beginning, you're allowing that person to see you. And in turn, they will feel more comfortable showing themselves. And if they aren't, you'll know.
Otherwise, isn't it just draining and it will wear you out to try to be so on and so perfect so that they will like you and choose you? But then you get in and you're with them. Now you wake up in the morning and this is the real you. Yeah. I mean, you wonder, are they going to like me? Just be you from the very beginning. It's a lot less stressful. It's a lot less of a headache.
And it's not about them choosing you. It's about you choosing them.
That's what my dad always says. You choose them.
Yeah. And so don't conform yourself.
I did word that wrong.
They want. So you have to be you and allow them to fall in love with, like, your magic, because you're the only one that has that magic. You possess your own beautiful magic that is unlike anybody else's. And when you try to pretend to be somebody else, then you take away all that magic.
That's right. That is right. Wow. Well, with that, thank you so much. We went over a half an hour because this is so interesting, intriguing, enlightening, everything. And I'm excited. I have inspiration now. I have something to use. I have tools just by talking to you for an hour and a half. I feel like I have tools. Yes. You know what? You are like a counselor.
I'm just a person who lives their life and is not afraid to talk about it.
Well, I love it. So thank you so much for your time and coming on. And I am so happy to have met you. And I will be sharing my experience with you of Diaries of a Divorcee, called
Diary of
Memoir.
Yep.
You say them all. You say them all. They're very clever.
It's www.diaryofadivorcee.com. Carrie Pyle Lawrence on Instagram, and Diary of a Divorcee on TikTok, and Divorcee has two E's. And I can't wait to hear about all of your dating experiences, and I just wanted to say that this has been a very enjoyable conversation. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate the platform and being able to share my story, and I'm really grateful for the opportunity.
You are very welcome, and I'm excited, and Johnny is probably very excited to go forward dating in the gray.
Yes, everybody's good.
I love it. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Carrie, and we wish everybody a great night. Thank you for listening. Find us on YouTube, Life, Laughter, Happiness, and we will have all the links to find Carrie Pye Lawrence on our description of the show for tonight.
Thank you. Good night, everyone.
Thank
you so much.
Bye, Carrie. Good night.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.